Michael, good morning.
Merhaba to you too, Jeremy. It's Turkish for hello.
Very good.
we've learnt one word in a month.
Well, that's probably more than most travellers manage, so you're doing pretty well.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Now, where exactly are you then this morning?
Well, we're in a camping ground at a town called Selçuk, which is about halfway down the Mediterranean coast facing Greece. And it's right beside the ruins of Ephesus, which was an old Hellenic Roman capital of Asia Minor, going mm-hmm. back a couple of centuries. And we're just about to leave and move further south.
So you've been there for, what, I think about 3 weeks now, 3 weeks or so? That sounds like you've covered a fair bit of ground already in that time.
Well, it's just ticked over a month, so 4 weeks. We've ridden about 1,000 k's, and we did about 500 k's by bus from Ankara. So we rode from Ankara to the from the capital, Ankara, to Istanbul. Then we went by bus to Çanakkale, which is the site of the Anzac Gallipoli battles, and then we cycled on from there. So. Yes, we're about halfway on our cycling distance and have done some pretty amazing things. And, of course, Anzac Day at Gallipoli was pretty good too.
Indeed. We'll return to that in a moment. I might just get you to remind us, I guess, though, of the scope of this adventure. So just to run for us through, again, I guess, where you're going exactly and the reasons behind what you're doing.
Well, we're cycling from Ankara, capital of Turkey, to Athens. And we'll have to ferry and island hop through the Greek section, of course. But in Turkey, we're doing a sort of big semicircle around the eastern Mediterranean coast, essentially, from Ankara. And we end up at a city right at the southern Mediterranean Sea called Antalya. And then we'll island hop back through. And it's all... Yeah, you know, it's just a continuation of our rides that we do at home, raising awareness for Medicine Sans Frontières, I suppose. In Turkey, there's no national office, so it's more if any tourists see us and wonder why we're cycling along, we certainly tell them to support MSF in their own countries.
Right.
So it's a holiday, and it's sort of a working awareness holiday, Jeremy.
And how's that side of it been going, the fundraising side? And I guess the sort of reactions that you have had from people when they've come across you cycling around Turkey?
Well, it's only awareness raising. Those sort of funds, we can't take any money or... And certainly Turkey doesn't have a national office for locals to donate to.
Hmm.
Greece has, so we're happy to tell any Greeks with any money left that there's a... national organisation in their country. But, people are pretty fascinated. Often they know about the organisation and in some cases some Canadians, already support them. So they were, we were patting them on the back as much as they were patting us.
Indeed. And remind us why you've chosen this particular route as well.
Well, my daughter chose this one. She finished school last year. This is a gap year, and we came up with a couple of ideas, including Vietnam and sort of Western Europe, but she liked the idea of going through Turkey. And I must say, it's been a pretty good choice. It's
right.
It's been good fun.
Now, and just before we talk about some of the, I guess, specific sort of experiences you've had, how difficult was it to organise this as well for somebody who might be thinking, well, I'd like to go and do something like this? What sort of things do you have to consider, I guess, and what's the terrain been like as well?
Well, the terrain is hilly. In some parts, mountainous, but we've done a couple of peaks of 1,200 metres, and that's, about 5 or 6 k's of pretty steady climbing with packs on the bike. So it's not something you do lightly, and they come at you a couple of times a day, those sort of hills. The back roads tend to be hillier, and so you sort of strike a balance between the highways with a nice shoulder that you share with the local farmers on their tractors and the mini bikes, and you know, or you take to the hills and have nobody on the road at all, just a couple of donkeys and a few people walking. So it takes some planning, and you know, at the end of it, I'll be able to say, well, now I know a bit more than I did at the start. I'd be able to do it again, probably, with some knowledge.
Yeah. Did you plan your exact route though before you left, or have you are you taking a few chances, I guess, along the way?
A couple of chances. We pretty much had the line we wanted. We talked to a few locals that did know a bit of English, and you know, they'd set us straight about, you know, you wouldn't take that road in a fit type of thing. But no, we've taken a couple of chances. The kids have sometimes enjoyed that, and sometimes, as a decision maker, they've bagged me out. So it's been okay.
Indeed. Now, you did mention Anzac Day a couple of weeks ago. You were in Gallipoli then, and I think that was the first time you'd been there. What was that experience like?
Well, it was great. The numbers have dropped, you know, over the last few years, from something like 12,000 people trying to stand on a postage stamp to about 3,500 this year, which seemed you know, really a small crowd. And the Australian part of the service, the Anzac part, started with the dawn at Anzac Cove, and then the Australian and New Zealand sort of gatherers walked back up the hill to Lone Pine for the Australian service, and the New Zealanders kept going higher to Chunuk Bear for their service. So it really was the two commemorations on the same morning. And the Lone Pine one was, I'd say, we enjoyed that more because it was a closer, more intimate experience, and we were certainly up close to the speakers and the music and all that sort of stuff.
In the past, it's certainly been one of those events that's been a bit overrun. I think with all your reports that we've seen here have certainly suggested it's become a bit of a, well, I don't know, almost a bit of a party kind of thing for a lot of Australians, and you know, the atmosphere's been slightly ruined by that, I guess, but that seems to be dying out. Is that what you're saying?
I think that has died out. Certainly, you know, security into the area is pretty tight. You can't take any alcohol. You know, no unopened bottles, all that sort of stuff. And I think that's knocked a lot of party stuff on the head. And even though there's still backpackers coming in from tours from England and so on, you know, really quite late in the morning, you know, 2 a.m. for the 5 o'clock start, they're on this day, and then they catch their bus straight away a few hours later. They're okay, you know. They, as long as everybody else, they're quite moved and quite still with the atmosphere. But also through the night, they've got a couple of big screens that they play documentaries and have musical items and stuff all through the night. So it really maintains a sense of what the place is about and a bit of calmness, I think.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Now, you also mentioned that you've run an Auskick session. You're certainly involved in Auskick back here in Dartmoor. How have you taken Auskick to Turkey?
Oh, well, that was a bit of a hoot. Yes, that took a bit of organising from home. We had to enlist, you know, the AFL Auskick and the international division of the AFL and the Australian Embassy in Ankara. But they managed to get a local school, a private school, an international school, show a bit of interest. And we went along there, and, you know, despite sort of saying we'd like little groups of 20 or something, I think we ended up with groups of about 200 and on a basketball court. So we couldn't exactly show the full skills, but they loved it. For sort of 8 to 10-year-olds, their hand-eye catching skills were brilliant because the Turks really only follow three sports. They follow soccer, basketball, and volleyball. A lot of the young girls play volleyball, and they're very good at soccer and basketball. But, you know, so they're catching, hand passing, picked that up in a flash. Their kicking was not too bad, but, yeah, it was really, really good.
Yeah. And the food, I'd imagine, you would have come across some pretty fantastic food along the way.
Well, I was thinking about this, Jeremy, and Turkish food is delicious. But I guess we're pretty privileged at home to be a multicultural country, because you can eat Turkish one night and then you can have Chinese the next and then a bit of Italian. But, you know, it does get a little bit the same if you end up with 30 breakfasts in a row of olives, feta cheese, bread, sliced tomato, you know, maybe some fig jam or a bit of strawberry jam for a change. It tastes great, but yes, there is a sameness to it. It doesn't matter what you eat day after day, I suppose. And in the evenings, you know, there's a, they call it a meze, sort of appetizers of hummus, tzatziki, and, you know, those sorts of appetizers.
Hmm.
And then the doner kebabs and the shish kebabs, they're all the go for the main course.
I also recall before you went, you were talking about woofing, which I think stands for Willing Workers on Organic Farms, and you've managed to do a little bit of that, have you, along the way as well?
Yes, yes. We, we've been to a couple of places. I think the highlight was a Turkish family that didn't speak any English at all, and they run an olive farm and milk about four goats. And they make soap and cheese out of the goat's milk and sell that at the local market.
Mm-hmm.
Produce some tomatoes for sauce that they also sell. And it would have been pretty hard work, apart from the fact that they knew a German Turk who spoke a bit of English in the same town, a female, and she came along and helped translate. And we had a great time. A couple of days there, it was fantastic. Eating Turkish style on the rug on the floor, with all the home prepared foods and checking out the farming operation was great.
And they took you to a wedding as well, did they?
Yes, yeah, that was a bit of a bonus. They sort of said, "What are you doing tonight?" And as if we were going out somewhere, you know, up in the mountains of Turkey. And we said, "No, well, nothing planned." And so they took us down to the reception for a Turkish wedding, some friends of theirs. But it wasn't, it was sort of like the reception after the main one. They have their family and friends for one celebration, and then they might move to a public hall where they'll have a sort of maybe 500 friends and do the dancing and music there, and, you know, a bit of wedding cake and a drink for everybody. And it's a sort of second tier of friends that go to that one. So we sat down the back and we weren't noticed.
Right. Okay. Now, what's still ahead of you then? How much longer have you got?
We've got about another month in Turkey, and then probably the same again through the Greek islands. It's getting hotter. It hasn't rained. I think we had one day of showers, and the temperatures are now sort of 25 to 30 each day, so it gets a bit hot in the afternoon cycling. It gets a bit hillier in some places, but we're nearer the sea, so we should be able to cool off a little bit as we head southwards.
Sounds very good.
Yeah, so we're still going okay. The drivers are quite wary. Well, not wary. They're considerate, and that was one of the things I was really worried about. And the roads have been much better than I thought. So on that count, we're fine.
And do you come across many other cyclists? So I imagine there probably aren't, wouldn't be many people doing what you're doing. But just generally, are there many people on bikes around the place?
In a couple of towns that are on the flat, you know, some of the kids and old men will be riding bikes around. But, you know, anywhere that's got a hill nearby, no, there's not one in sight. So this particular town at the moment, Selçuk, there's a few bikes around here, a bit of a bike culture. But in terms of long-distance cyclists, we've met only four in 1,000 Ks. And I must say, our 1,000 Ks pales into insignificance when we heard their stories. A couple of Belgians were cycling from Belgium to China.
Right, gosh.
We've met one guy here. He waved at us on the other side of the road and said he was going to Norway. And at the campground we're at the moment, there's an elderly German who's I reckon he's been around the world about 7 times. So he's just down here for a lazy couple of thousand kilometres, filling in time till he goes to Tibet.
Gosh.
Tibet to cycle there. So.
You should just embellish your story a bit and say, well, we're just riding to Australia, you know.
Yeah, well, we've been coming up with lines like that we should have used more quickly, yeah.
Michael, we will hopefully catch up with you again in a couple of weeks' time. In the meantime, people can read more of your adventures via your blog. Just give us the blog address.
Yes, that blog's www.cyclingacrossborders.wordpress.com, Jeremy. So I think my daughter keeps that pretty much up to date with a few photos as well. So. Thanks very much for the phone call, and we have to do it again.
Indeed, good to catch up with you, and we'll put all those details on our website as well, plus a couple of photos that you've sent through to us, which is great. Michael, sounds like you're having a lovely time, and we will catch up with you in a couple of weeks. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jeremy.